Welcome to Classical Companion. I'm Diane Jones, and over these weeks and months, I'm chatting with artists and musicians all over the country now about the music they turn to in these challenging times. And I say all over the country because today I'm speaking with Peter Vandegraaff. You hear him overnights here on WCNY Classic FM. He is the host of Through the Night through the Beethoven Satellite Network, and he is the music director of KWAX Classical Oregon. Peter, thank you so much for jumping in and sharing your favorites list with us today.
It's my pleasure, Diane. It's great to be on the air. In fact, I've been on the air at WCNY before.
Yes, you have.
I sang with the Syracuse Symphony a few times and came into the studios and did some things on air with not you, but someone else there. And it's great to be back on the air there.
We are so thrilled to have you, and everyone loves listening to you overnight. And this is a really neat opportunity because we get to talk a little differently. You're not worried about fitting into timings and so forth. We can just talk about the music that you love.
That's exciting.
Before we start talking about the music, though, let me just check in with you. I'm checking in with everybody. How are you doing in these strange and interesting times that we are in the midst of here?
Well, it's funny. In classical radio, people tune into it for consolation, for escape, for beauty, for uplift. And I think that we're probably doing better than a lot of people. Don't you think, Diane? Because, I mean, it's almost a growth industry. When things go wrong, people turn to things that will make them heal.
I think
so. And I think that classical radio has a big part in that. I have heard from so many listeners over the last little while saying, where would we be without you? Thanks for being there. This piece did this to me, that kind of thing. So, you know, we actually are having a fundraiser right now at KWAX and Eugene, and it's going better than anything I've ever seen.
Wow.
Because people are, you know, they want to support things that help them, and this is something that does. So we're actually doing great.
Oh, that's good to hear. And we're hearing the same thing here. People are,
sure you are,
looking to us to be that bit of an oasis in the midst of the madness.
And this program, it helps with that, too. I think it's a marvelous idea.
As I said, I have to give credit where credit is due, and many thanks to Susan Spafford and Cornelia Orth from the Cayuga Chamber Orchestra for launching the idea, and we've taken it and run with it, and I'm so pleased with all the folks like yourself who are jumping in and contributing. It makes it really brings us together as a community.
Completely understandable, and I'm very happy to do it.
Let's talk, before we talk about the specific pieces, and you're actually going to surprise me with the pieces. Usually I have a list ahead of time, and so you're going to surprise me today. But what is it that you are looking for in the music that you want to turn to and the music that you want to listen to right now?
Well, you know, I'm looking for a lot of different things. It's interesting. We've gotten phone calls at the station here from people saying, you're playing happy music. This is not a happy time. We should not be hearing this. Or all you're doing is playing happy music. We should be listening to, you know, Barber's Adagio for Strings. We should be listening to deeply felt, you know, why aren't you playing Mahler during these times? And I think what they're all saying, or what my take on this, is that everyone has a different response to difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of am a distillation of that, in that I look to a lot of different things to lift me up, to give me courage and provide me with what I need during times like this. So this is going to be quite an eclectic list. It's not going to be, you know, just this composer or that kind of piece. It's all over the place, because I think that you know, people need a lot of different things in life in general. And classical music covers every kind of emotion and feeling and experience. And you put them all together, and I think that's what brings you strength in times like this.
One of my previous guests had said that part of what she looks for is she's seeing it as going through those stages of grief and the music reflecting all those stages.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Well, let's jump in. What do you have on your list? What do you want to start out with?
Well, I always start with my favorite composer of all, and that is Joseph Haydn. And people are sometimes surprised by that, because I don't think he's the greatest composer of all, although I think he's one of the greatest. But what he does for me, no one else does. Because he has a joy in his music, in everything, even in things that are, you know, seemingly tragic, there's still a joy there isn't a seriousness about him. There's always a happiness. And he was a very happy person himself.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I am really in need of something to lift me, the very first thing I do is go to my collection of Haydn string quartets. And to me, there's nothing like that. And I think there's several reasons. First of all, as I mentioned, the joy in the music. He's always playing musical jokes. There's an intellectual level to it as well. But there's also the idea of four people in a quartet conversing with each other and working together to make something beautiful. Each individual might not be as interesting or beautiful, but you put them together the way Haydn does, and that's where I go first. So what I would suggest you play is, you can choose any of the Opus 9 plus sonatas, quartets. The very early ones they're a little more simplistic. He's still, finding his way, learning his art. But after Opus 9, you can choose any string quartet, and it's going to lift you up. So I would go to, I'm just going to randomly say the Opus 50, number 2 string quartet of Haydn. Always interesting things going on. Always playing around. And in the process, you'll hear the joy that he has in his music. So that's what I recommend, first of all.
Well, let's start out with some joy from Haydn. We will use that Opus 50, number 2 string quartet. I hear what you're hearing in that joyfulness and that uplift in the Haydn string quartets, and there's no comparison. He is unique, and the father of string quartets, really.
Yeah, those are, I think, his very best works. Boy, it's hard to choose in everything he touched. The symphonies, the sonatas, the sacred works, everything is just a masterpiece, really. But those quartets, I think, are so very special. It's understandable why Mozart was so attracted to them.
Most definitely. Well, what do you have for us next?
Well, another composer that's among my top five favorites, and again, something of a surprise, but for the same reason as Haydn, is that there is always joy in this composer's music, and it is Domenico Scarlatti.
Yes.
And he wrote those hundreds of little sonatas, and every one of them is an absolute pearl. And there's just something happy about it. It just lifts you up. And I'm a singer, but I also am an amateur harpsichordist. And so it's got to be played on the harpsichord for me.
Oh, yes.
Something about the brightness of the sound. It loses something in the piano, although I love piano music. And again, you can pretty much randomly take any sonata by Scarlatti. Now, do you want me to choose one randomly?
Sure. Let's see what comes to your mind.
Let's do the Kirkpatrick Catalog 199.
All right.
It's a typical one. They're in two-part form. And the inventiveness, they're all so different from each other. But the inventiveness and the joy of the music is what really lifts me.
Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
you're right about the harpsichord. It is so much lighter of an instrument than the piano. Even a light touch on the piano doesn't compare to the harpsichord.
You're right. I prefer, if the music was written for the instrument, I like listening to it on that instrument. I'm not crazy about transcriptions, although I play them a lot on my show, oddly enough. But I prefer period instruments to modern when it's written for that ensemble. That's the sound that the composer had in his head. And I love piano, but not with Scarlatti sonatas.
No, that light and brightness of the harpsichord is, as you say, just very uplifting. What do you have for us next?
Another of my favorite composers.
You're like me. Everything is my favorite composer.
I know. It's so hard to choose. I say Haydn's my very favorite, but then the next tier down, there's a whole bunch of them. But when it comes to maybe opera, and opera's a huge part of my life, I would say that Massenet is probably my favorite composer.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we could find a lot of excerpts and even full operas by Massenet, but we're not going to do that. We're going to play something that I think is perfect for this time when so many are suffering in so many different ways. It was written as an interlude between the acts of Massenet's Thais. You know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going.
And it depicts her conversion from being a courtesan into being a religious person. And it's called the Meditation, but the absolute beauty, when Massenet hit on a beautiful melody, and he's kind of like Puccini, but I vastly prefer him to Puccini. When he hits on a beautiful melody, there's something that just fills your soul. It is so exquisitely beautiful. So Meditation from Thais by Massenet.
The moment you said Massenet, I said he's going for the Meditation.
I could have done a lot of Massenet would have that same effect, but this is one that a lot of people know, and I think it has that effect on a lot of people.
Well, and I think that's the other thing that happens to us is we know it so well and it's so familiar, so it kind of carries us not just from the music itself right now, but from our associations with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
What else do you have for us? Because I know you've got quite a
list.
Well,
another of my favorite composers. And this is, of course, it's his 250th birthday this year, but Beethoven.
Mm-hmm.
The struggles that he went through in life and the struggles to compose, I think, translate into something that a lot of people can relate to, particularly during difficult times like this. And there's a lot of things that we can choose from Beethoven. I've actually chosen three movements from different works, very different works from each other. I hope that's okay.
That's fine.
If you look at the late quartets of Beethoven, I think that they are unique. I don't know of any other works in music history, particularly if we look in the past, that still sound modern. There's a timeless quality to the late quartets that no one else has, with maybe a couple of exceptions. But if we look, you can choose again any movement. You know, I'm actually going to change my list from what I originally wrote down. I'm going to go with the Große Fuge, the Great Fugue, which originally was the final movement of the 13th quartet. But here you get into the cerebral aspect of healing and consolation, because this will just take you in and take your mind away from what's going on in the world. It's music that demands attention. It's not something you can have in the background.
Mm-hmm.
What he does is just so, it sounds like it could have been written yesterday. How many how many pieces can you say that about from the early 19th century?
Mm-hmm.
His genius is so overwhelming, and I think particularly in this piece. Here's a man who's gone through his entire life through some of the most difficult circumstances that any person could go through, let alone a composer, and he comes out with this towards the end of his life. And it is, to me, it's just overwhelming genius and complexity, yes, but there's also something very cathartic about it.
Let's take a listen to the Grosse Fuge from the String Quartet No. 13 of Beethoven. Beethoven is one of those composers who keeps coming up on these lists over and over and over again.
Doesn't surprise me.
He carries you, as you say, the depth of emotion and feeling in every note that he writes just sweeps you right along.
They say that, you know, God came down and inspired Mozart, but Beethoven reached up to God for his inspiration. It was his striving for it. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. Mortals trying to, you know, working so hard at becoming better. And I think that piece just really embodies that.
I agree. Now, you say you have more Beethoven for us as well.
Well, I do. This is a piece that, to me, is one of the most inspirational things ever written. The work never fails to move me. I think it's one of the two greatest pieces ever written, and it's the Missa Solemnis of Beethoven. And I think there are similar qualities to the Grosse Fuge we just heard, but in this one movement, there is a lift to it, a power to it, that to me is absolutely unequaled in the entire Western civilization, and that's the Gloria portion. I have had occasions on hearing this or performing it. Well, no, never performing it because I'm performing it, but hearing it where I've been moved to tears, which doesn't happen very often. I don't have that response to music very often, but the power of this, particularly as he sweeps into the end of this Gloria portion of the Missa Solemnis, is absolutely overwhelming.
Let's listen to the Gloria from the Missa Solemnis. I agree with you. I don't necessarily get moved to tears often from a piece of music, but every now and then a work or even a specific performance of a work just reaches in, and before I know it, I'm just in tears.
Yeah, yeah. There's a sound of just, you know, humanity coming together in praise of God in this in that part of that Mass that to me is just, it sends me. It's just amazing. The genius of that man, wow. But I have more Beethoven.
You do have more Beethoven. What else do we have?
I'm not quite done yet. There's another, and this I remember one of the pieces I've done more than any other, in fact, that I've performed with the Syracuse Symphony, is Beethoven Ninth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something very special about sitting in the midst of the orchestra waiting to go on for the last movement. And I'll never forget the first time I did it. It was at the Utah Symphony many years ago, and Joseph Silverstein, and you know, I've heard the Beethoven Ninth prior to that many times, but to be in the midst of the orchestra hearing the third movement, the Adagio, and to hear what is going on around you, the parts, to be in awe of the genius of a deaf man. And my brother's deaf, my grandfather's deaf. I've always been surrounded by deafness, interestingly, considering my profession.
Yeah.
But to think, here's a deaf man who has tapped in to this exquisite, excruciating beauty of the Adagio movement of the Ninth Symphony, is that to me was just unforgettable. And I think it has that same kind of beauty and uplift that we're talking about, and pieces we turn to in times of difficulties. So yeah, this piece does it for me too.
Let's listen to the Adagio movement from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. It is amazing to me that with his deafness, and we know now that it was actually tinnitus, so it's not just a lack of sound, it's a tone that was continuously in his ears. And he comes up with these things, these unbelievably beautiful
how
music.
How is it possible? There are things in that movement that the audience doesn't even really hear.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fascinating. Of course, when you're sitting again in the midst of an orchestra listening to it, How does the human mind conceive this? I don't understand. but it's inspiring. It's inspiring to hear that kind of thing.
Most definitely. Now, you have more for us.
I do. I'm going to go on here, Diane. I hope that's okay.
That's okay. I mean, we could sit with Beethoven for the rest of the day. I would do that.
We could. But we're going to move on to another composer that has to be, and I'm sure you've come across this a lot in your interviews in this series. And that, of course, is Johann Sebastian Bach.
Oh, yes.
And I mentioned that the Missa Solemnis is one of the two greatest pieces ever written. The other, which may be even better, is the St. Matthew Passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I hesitate to put this on the list because this is a piece, and although it is excerptable and it's just a single aria, the power in this piece comes when you hear the entire work leading up to it.
Mm-hmm.
So by itself, you think, oh, that's a beautiful piece. When you listen to the entire Passion and follow the text, then you come in the last portion, almost to the end of the work, the bass aria, Mache dich, mein Herz rein. And there is something about what he does that, again, well, this happened just on, as I was listening to this on Easter Sunday, just moves me to absolute tears. It is to me, this is the crowning moment of Western civilization, Western art. That's quite a statement to make, but I feel strongly about that, particularly when in the context of the entire piece. But again, you listen to it alone, it's beautiful. I would ask the listener to go back and hear the entire work and see if it has a different effect on you when you get to that part.
Well, we'll start with that aria. Let's take a listen. ¶¶ Now, for folks who do want to go back and hear the whole St. Matthew Passion, that's one of the things we are making sure is that we have your list and we're putting the links up to the complete work so folks can go onto the website and hear the whole work so they can hear what you're describing about that build up to that aria and really experience
it. And I'm
going to
recommend my favorite recording of that too, because there are so many.
Yes.
And on the Harmonia Mundi label, there's one with Philippe Herreweghe conducting the Collegium Vocale of Ghent,
Mm-hmm.
And that is, to me, my favorite record. I mean, there's many wonderful recordings, but that's the one that really does it for me.
I'm going to double check and make sure that we have that one. What else do we have? I hate to move on, but
we should spend a long time with music. Well, actually, I do have another Bach piece,
mm-hmm.
which also in the same way that the Grosse Fuge of Beethoven brings you in and provides you with an escape really from troubles and the world. And there's an intellectual basis for this composition. It's the Chaconne from the Second Solo Violin Partita.
Oh yes,
and. I'm a nut for chaconnes anyway. You know, there's a continually repeating bass pattern and then the variations played over it, which is remarkable in that it's a work for a single instrument and
yes.
a single instrument that isn't like a piano where you can play multiple notes throughout.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always fascinating to me when I listen to what a composer does with that very simple bass line that just goes over and over. And what Bach does is miraculous. And if you have the Nathan Milstein recording, that's the one that I think is just, he gets to to my mind, the essence of Bach. But that's another piece on my list.
Let's take a listen to Nathan Milstein with the Chaconne from the Second Solo Violin Partita. I don't know if you know, Peter, I'm a flutist, and that was one of the things that I really struggled with as a flutist was playing some of these solo works of Bach and essentially accompanying yourself with an instrument that's not designed to accompany itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
I can see why people have orchestrated that and arranged it for piano where you can really flesh it out. But to me, if you just go back to the essence of the simplicity, it's sort of like the sketches of Rembrandt.
Mm-hmm.
Every line is perfect.
Yes.
If you change any little line or any note, as it would be in the Chaconne, it just doesn't. It's not the same, and that's the genius, the overwhelming genius of Bach.
Yes, and then and to have such a skilled performer that really brings it out so beautifully too.
Exactly.
Makes a huge, huge difference. Well, do we need to move on from Bach now?
Well, we do. We do. I mean, I wish we didn't, but and we could stay there forever. But this actually isn't one of my favorite composers. I enjoy his music a lot. I've performed a lot of it. But this piece, I think, is one of the top 10 masterpieces in my mind, and I've never heard anyone else say this. I'm talking about Schubert and his string quintet.
Uh-huh.
And there's just a simplistic beauty to this, too, that takes away the cares of the world. Particularly in the first movement, although the whole work is a masterpiece, and it's a huge work. But if you could play the first movement of this, this would definitely be on my list of works to listen to in times of trouble.
We'll take a listen to the first movement of Schubert's String Quintet.
Thank you.
are some composers who, you know, they're, it's not necessarily you go, oh, that composer, I have to listen to everything. But every now and then they'll come out with something that just really pulls you in.
Yeah. And there's several pieces by Schubert that do that, by the way. I almost put his song Du bist die Ruhe on the list, which is just that absolute exquisite. But, you know, there's a lot of Schubert that's amazing and great, but he doesn't make my top 10 favorites. But, boy, that string quintet really does it.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful. What do we have up next?
Well, okay, there's two more pieces, by the way, on my list. One is by another of my favorite opera composers, and this is one who is done almost never outside the Soviet Union. Or, sorry, outside of Russia.
He wasn't even the Soviet Union. Boy, we're showing our age, aren't we?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. I love this man's music, or his operas, so much that I actually flew down, no, it was a year ago last summer, to Santa Fe just to see an opera of his. And there's a few pieces and composers I'll do that for. But I'm talking about Rimsky-Korsakov.
Mm-hmm.
His operas are so amazing. Now, his orchestral music is, of course, as well, and people love it. And, you know, great melodist, and what color, oh, my goodness. But the operas have those same qualities. And there is an opera that is so little known. I think it was his second to last opera. It's called, it has a terrible title, The Legend of the Invisible City of Kitej and the Maiden Favronia. Well, who's going to produce an opera with that title?
They're not going to do it just because they don't want to put it out on the marquee.
Exactly. It won't fit on the marquee. It's usually simply called The Legend of the Invisible City of Kitej, which is unwieldy in and of itself. But the opening of this opera, it's called, he called it A Hymn to Nature. And you hear bird calls, and you hear the awakening of nature. But this is, and nature, there's a healing aspect of nature, of course, that comes in times of trouble as well. This is exquisite music. And you listen to it, and you think, how do I not know this? How is this never done? It's even hard to find recordings of suites from the opera. But it's about a 4 to 5 minute opening. And a remarkable opening to this very little-known opera by Rimsky-Korsakov.
Let's take a listen. You may not be familiar with it, but I think you're going to love it. The Hymn to Nature, the opening of the opera, The Legend of the Invisible City. That is absolutely gorgeous. And you're right, nature is so healing. And when you hear it in the music, and it just carries you outside the room that we've all been stuck in.
Right, exactly. Exactly. This is an opera to listen to when you can't get out. But it's hard to get a hold of. It's been recorded only a couple of times.
Mm.
But boy, it's worth tracking down.
Most definitely. Now you've got one more work to share with us.
I do. This is a weird one. This
Uh-oh.
Is a really weird one.
I love
but
weird
to
ones.
To me, it is. Yeah, I do too. Anyone that listens to my show knows it. This is a composer who was German / Italian. And so he has an unusual last name. His name is Ermanno Wolf Ferrari. And he focused most of his career on writing opera, and successfully so. And his operas are wonderful, but they're very, very rarely done. But he wrote a lot of other things besides. And I've explored his music over the years whenever I can. I really like it. He lived well into the 20th century. What, 1947 he died, something like
mm-hmm,
that?
Something like that, yeah.
But he always wrote in with a real romantic soul. And again, people in times of difficulty look for beauty, I think. And there's a lot of classical music that provides that. But some pieces really go over the top with that. And he wrote a piano quintet. I hope you have a recording of this. I've only seen one. I have no idea why this is not just absolute standard repertoire. But the first movement of Wolf Ferrari's piano quintet has the most meltingly beautiful melody and melodies, particularly the first one, the first melody. But wow, this is really something you need to hear.
Let's listen.
Thank you.
that is just breathtakingly beautiful. And it just transports you.
Exactly. And that's what you need to have sometimes. But boy, spend some time with the music of Wolf Ferrari and you'll be glad that you did.
Well, it's a marvelous, marvelous list that you've shared with us, Peter, and I really appreciate it. And before I let you go, I just want to give you a chance. I'm asking everyone if you'd like to just leave us with any last thoughts, anything about the power of music in these times, or anything you'd like to just share with the listeners.
Yeah, I think this is something that the human spirit, I think, longs for in general. But when you have times of trouble, if you fill yourself and your surroundings with beauty, and I'm talking about music or art, visual art, anything that, or nature, anything that is beautiful, that's the remedy that I think you really need. And people say, I've been accused of being a musical elitist before, and I actually think that's a compliment in a way, because elitist is someone who's striving for something better.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, I'm an elitist. I don't want to waste my time with things that aren't going to do me good, that are just going to be, you know, pablum time wasters kind of thing. I don't want to do that. I want to elevate myself. And I'm not going to say that classical music has the corner on that, but I think that there's a lot of pablum in the world and a lot of ephemeral things in the world that just shouldn't be waste. You shouldn't waste your time with. If you're going to really try to lift yourself, seek out the best. And I think that is a lot of that is found in the classical music world. So that's my advice.
Marvelous advice from Peter Vandegraaff. Peter hosts Through the Night. You hear it every night of the week here on Classic FM. We are so thrilled to have you on the airways. Peter is also the music director for KWAX Classical Oregon. Peter, once again, thank you so much for sharing some time with us and sharing your music with us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Diane. And what a great idea. I think you're doing great things by having this series on.
Oh, thank you so much.